Hi, I'm Peggy O'Neill, home economist and host of the weekly podcast, Food for the Future. Every Saturday, I share optimistic stories from farmers and agri-food innovators so our human family can find the way forward together. Food for the Future inspires local creativity for global change, and it's all made possible by my Platinum Elite sponsor, Burnbrae Farms, Eggs for Life. You can find Food for the Future wherever you get your podcasts.
It is 900 CHML. I'm Scott Thompson, All Request Friday edition. If Hamilton Today, you want to be a part of it, feel free, 905-645-3221. You can talk, you can text, you can leave as your last word. Join us for Hammerhead Trivia coming up after the 5 o'clock news. While Ukraine's counteroffensive advances, there's a push from some NATO members to speed up the process and get Ukraine into their ranks. And Anita Anan has stopped short of joining that call to action. Let's talk to Arl Brown, Professor International Relations, Senior Member of the Monk School of Global Affairs at the University of Toronto, and with us now. Arl, thank you for the time. Hope you're well.
Thank you. Good afternoon.
So, Arl, I remember at the beginning of all of this, way back when, that even Ukraine wasn't really that interested in joining NATO. I remember President Zelensky saying that. What has changed? Why now? Is Ukraine obviously want to be a part of it? Why is this push now?
Obviously, the aggression in Ukraine and the illegal conquest of large chunks of Ukraine are crucial factors, and we see changes. At the beginning of this conflict, you may recall that Finland and Sweden were neutral countries, and opinion polls prior to the February invasion of last year showed that the majority in both countries were not in favor of joining NATO, and that flipped completely because of Russian actions. So I think we have to look at the reality that there has been this brazen violation of international law, international norms, and it is an ongoing aggression that is causing an enormous amount of damage to Ukraine. And naturally, they would like to have protection in the future. And they are very eager to have the same kind of protection that Finland now has and that Sweden hopes to have. And the kind of protection that was described by Mr. Biden at the beginning of the conflict, or just before the conflict started, where he was very eager to signal to the Russians that he's not going to get involved in a war over Ukraine, but he was going to defend, that is, President Biden, every inch of NATO territory. Well, Ukraine, having undergone all this pain, they would like to have that assurance as well. And many would think that they earned it.
Odd that when this all started, Putin was worried that NATO was advancing, and now he's actually driven people right into the arms of NATO. How difficult is this? How much of a challenge is it to bring a country like Ukraine into NATO?
Less than it would have been a year ago, because given the very significant military aid that has been given Ukraine and the transformation of the Ukrainian forces into armed forces that really resemble and are more and more interact with those of NATO, as well as other political reforms that are being undertaken inside Ukraine, I think Ukraine is vastly more prepared to get into NATO than it was even a year and a half ago. And that progress has been very significant. And they really have earned that right, according to the British, for instance. And even though it may not be quite as fast as the accession of Finland, and hopefully the accession of Sweden, which, but for the objection of Turkey and Hungary, should have been in already, but Ukraine could be fast-tracked, and this is what the issue is. The British Secretary of Defense is in favor, and the British government, of fast-tracking, that is, dropping the membership action plan, which had been applied to so many states previously, but not to Sweden and not to Finland, because that is a prolonged, it's a useful process, but it's a prolonged process, and Ukraine needs to get that assurance quickly. And also we have to look at the signal that would be sent to Russia. And that is, if Vladimir Putin is convinced, as he appears to be, that time is on Russia's side, speeding up the membership of Ukraine basically would tell the Kremlin, no, time is not on your side. and maybe should cut your losses, give up the territories, and come to some kind of negotiations that are meaningful, rather than preserve this hope that Vladimir Putin has that somehow the West will fall apart, that he will still prevail in Ukraine, and that it's just a matter of time before he can turn around what has so far for Russia proven to be a strategic disaster.
Why has Canada stopped short of joining that call?
It's a very good question, and I've been puzzling over this, because we have generally been very supportive of Ukraine. We have been generous with financial aid, somewhat less so with military aid, because we just don't have that much to give. We could be a little bit more creative. The Danes and the Dutch are buying tanks for Ukraine, and we could do the same kind of thing on a larger scale, because we don't have that much to give. Our own forces are way below what we need for a country this size. But I think there are maybe two factors involved in this. One is that if Ukraine becomes a member of NATO, then the support that we have to give Ukraine as also a member of NATO would be more than just an act of generosity. Mm-hmm. It would become a treaty obligation, which right. means that Canada would have to have the capacity to do that. And we are spending about 1.29% of our GDP on defense, which, regardless of the kind of accounting acrobatics that some of our officials may engage in, is way too little. The size of the Canadian forces is far too small. So we really would need to change that capacity. And there's no indication that the Canadian government is prepared to do that. Mm. And so this could be something that holds us back. The second element is leadership within the alliance. The British have tried to take on a leadership role, and they've been very bold in stating a strategy of winning from the very beginning that was not shared by the Biden administration, which has been remarkably timid and often feckless. The British, as you will recall, took the lead on providing tanks. They took the lead on providing some long-range missiles, and then others eventually followed. But United States is the leader of NATO. And so we are not prepared to take the same bold steps, it seems, as the British, and we follow American leadership, and American leadership is not on board in terms of shortening the process.
Harold Brown with us, Professor of International Relations, Senior Member of the Monk School of Global Affairs, University of Toronto. Always fascinating, Harold. Thank you so much for the time. Be well.
Thank you.
In order to understand why Toronto is the greatest city on the planet, you need to think like the city, walk its streets, and touch its grass. Hi, I'm Dani Stover. For me, Toronto is home. And most of the time, I really love it. From Parkdale to East York and all of the potholes in between. I've turned that consensual and work-appropriate love affair with my city into a podcast called Today in TO. Together, we'll take a look at all of the biggest issues impacting our city, and we'll try to help connect the dots to make sense of it all. So if you want a place to catch up on what's happening in the GTA, that's not TikTok, join us on Today in TO. New episodes every Wednesday. Search for and follow Today in TO wherever you're listening right now.